Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Spike Bowman, who's a former intelligence officer, an international lawyer, and a recognized specialist in national security law with extensive experience in espionage and terrorism investigations. He was most recently the Deputy National Counterintelligence Executive, and prior to that was a senior research fellow at the National Defense University. He's retired from senior executive service at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, where he served successfully as Deputy General Counsel. Welcome to Background Briefing, Spike Bowman.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And the Israeli spy, Jonathan J. Pollard, has become both a bargaining chip and something of a political football now. It appears that Secretary of State Kerry offered him up, perhaps some suggest out of desperation, to keep the peace talks going. Apparently this is something that Netanyahu wanted to placate his right flank, but it's resulted in the Palestinians then basically saying, well, if the Israelis are going to get concessions, we want them. And then they went ahead because Israel reneged apparently on releasing Palestinian prisoners. They have then thrown a spanner in the works by signing a bunch of multilateral agreements that are considered to be deal breakers. So I'm walking you through, you know, this Pollard appears to be, you know, whether it's his mischief in this case or not, he still appears to be a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah, this is not the first time they've suggested that maybe his release would help somehow in solving the Palestinian issues, but it's difficult for me to understand exactly how that would work.
Well, it's done the opposite, though, hasn't it?
I think so, yes. I believe it probably has.
So why then, from your experience, and you were involved with the case at the time of Pollard's arrest and trial, you were the liaison officer for the Department of Defense to the Department of Justice and the coordinator of the investigation into the damage that Mr. Pollard's spying did to the United States intelligence community.
Well, just the initial stages of that.
Right. Well, you certainly know a lot more than most of us do about what he did. And so why is it, do you think, the Israelis are going to the mat for this guy?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When Pollard was first arrested, of course, they wanted nothing to do with him. But he became sort of a folk hero in Israel, and it's become a political issue for every Israeli leader since Pollard was arrested. It's really politics at home for Netanyahu at this point.
So, do we know, is Netanyahu placating his right flank, or does he also feel passionately, as others do, that somehow this fellow is a hero and needs to be repatriated to Israel?
I think that he's placating his right flank at this point.
I see. So, but there is this feeling in Israel that somehow, because in 1985 Pollard sought asylum in Israel's embassy in Washington, but they turned him away. My recollection is that there was actually a car chase involved, wasn't there?
There was.
So just walk us through the actual events, if you can.
Well, I wasn't present at the event, but what happened was they were following Pollard. I wouldn't say it got into a high-speed chase, but there was a chase involved. He went to the Israeli embassy and went in, and they basically threw him back out.
And he, in terms of his Israeli handler, did he ever get kicked out of the country?
He wasn't kicked out of the country. I think they left quickly.
I see. Well, but my understanding is that Pollard did fairly well out of spying. It wasn't entirely because of his devotion to Israel.
I don't think it was in response to his devotion to Israel at all. He had a number of schemes at the time trying to figure out how to make money. And this just happened to be one that he fell into because a friend of his introduced him to a colonel in the Israeli Air Force. And he immediately offered to help.
But this resulted in him being paid up to $1,500 a month. Apparently, his Israeli handler bought Pollard's wife a diamond and sapphire ring, and they sent the couple on expensive holiday trips to Europe.
That's true. In fact, they met in Paris once, and at that point, Pollard began to say that he was taking a lot of risks and, you know, he might go to jail. And they said, well, what do you want? And he said, up it by $1,000 a month.
So how close was the relationship then with the handler? My understanding is that the handler was basically tasking Pollard for specific intelligence documents. And at one point, Pollard didn't bring some documents and the handler was annoyed with him.
Yes. That's true, but he brought a lot of documents, and you're correct. He was tasked for specific documents. They had a book that listed a lot of the intelligence publications that were available, and they tasked him out of that book.
So, again, I'm speaking with Spike Bowman, who is a former intelligence officer, an international lawyer, and a recognized specialist in national security law with extensive experience in espionage and terrorism investigations. He was most recently the Deputy National Counterintelligence Executive, and prior to that was a senior research fellow at the National Defense University. He's retired from senior executive service at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, where he served successfully as Deputy General Counsel. And you had an op-ed a little while back in the New York Times, Don't Trust This Spy. And in that op-ed, Spike Bowman, you did talk about some of the damage he did. I take it it's classified in terms of the details, but it looks as though he gave the Israelis sources and methods in terms of signals intelligence.
Yes, that's correct.
And also sold them the daily report from the U.S. Navy's 6th Fleet Ocean Surveillance Information Facility in Rota, Spain. We know from a 2001 article by Seymour Hersh, who reported that William Casey, the former director of Central Intelligence, had said that information relayed by Mr. Pollard had been traded to Russia for Jewish emigres. And also the director of Naval Intelligence apparently said that Israel had passed on information from Pollard to the Soviets. What do we know about that beyond those two sources?
I think nothing else. I never learned where Casey got his information, and the director of Naval Intelligence had some information about certain things that had been passed on to a couple of other, possibly two other countries.
So what then was the weight of Secretary of Defense at the time, Caspar Weinberger's memo that detailed the damage that had been done by Pollard, which apparently led, or at least is attributed, to the sentence? This was read in court by the to the judge.
Well, it's possible that it contributed to it. I can tell you the structure of the affidavit that Weinberger signed. It selected 19 documents that represented the totality of what we believe that Pollard had turned over to the Israelis, and it listed the type of damage that would come from exposing the type of information that each one of those 19 documents represented. I'm not convinced that the document was the reason for the life sentence, because I personally delivered that document to the judge, and he took it and made the comment, I don't think I really need to read this, but I know the government wants me to, so I will.
So what then is the arguments that Alan Dershowitz and others that have been for the longest time asking for Pollard's release here in the United States? My sense is that while in Israel there may be a clamor to have him released, I don't see the same thing over here. And certainly the op-eds recently in response to news that Secretary of State Kerry might be using or offering up Pollard as a way to save the peace talks, the editorials have not been very favorable. So there seems to be very few real defenders of Pollard here in the United States.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think most people think a spy is a spy, regardless of who he gave the information to. And in fact, you know, if anybody has paid any attention to the case, Snowden has certainly done more than Pollard did. But Pollard is probably second on the list of having exposed the most information to a foreign power.
Well, in Pollard's case, I guess you've been able to do an after-action report, right, a damage control.
Yeah, there's been several damage reports on it. I have not been a part of those because when I left the Navy, I went to the FBI, and most of my work there, after 9/11, was in terrorism.
But in Snowden's case, I guess there is an ongoing counterintelligence investigation. I've spoken to a few people, for example, the former CIA officer Bob Baer, who covers intelligence for CNN. He believes that Snowden was recruited by the Russians back in Geneva when he was working there, when he tried to break into the computer of the Directorate of Operations, and that arguably this whole thing has been a Russian operation from the get-go, and there's no question that Putin's enjoying it, and it's the gift that keeps on giving, and most of what's been released has been damaging to U.S. national security as opposed to exposing domestic spying.
Yes, I think that's true. I don't know whether he was recruited by the Russians or not. I've heard the allegation. I'm not really convinced.
Right. Well, I haven't. Not too many people appear to be. But in terms of when you say that Snowden's done more damage, is that to say that because they don't entirely know what he's given the Russians, and that obviously he's in Russia, that they just have to change all their sources and methods, which presumably is going to cost the taxpayer billions, if not trillions?
Absolutely. It's for certain that intelligence agencies are going to have to do severe modifications in order to keep doing their work.
So, again, just to compare the two, you say that Snowden is considerably worse than the damage that Pollard's done, but surely there's a fundamental difference. Pollard did this during the height of the Cold War, did he not?
He did.
And do we know anything in terms of what repercussions have been identified, or is it just speculation on the part, as we cited the Seymour Hersh leak from DCI Casey and the Naval Intelligence head?
Yeah, and there's a lot more speculation than there is knowledge. We do know of a few things that happened that was the result of Pollard turning over information to the Israelis, but we don't know a lot. And he, by his own admission, he turned over enough information to occupy a space 6 feet by 6 feet by 10 feet. So we really don't know everything that was turned over.
So just in terms of a personality profile, there hasn't been a lot done on Snowden, except the historian at Princeton, Sean Wilentz, wrote a piece in the New Republic that suggested that he was a fairly cold-hearted libertarian based upon his transcripts of his chat rooms online, where he basically said things like, F old people, who needs Social Security, that kind of stuff. But what kind of psychological profile did you put together for, or did others put together for Pollard to figure out what motivated him?
A couple of things that came out of this. First of all, his history showed that he was a person who wanted to do great things. He told people at various times that he was a Mossad agent, that he had been captured by the Arabs and tortured. He when he was working for the Naval Intelligence, he was sent to a psychiatrist. So he was a person who just was looking for something to make him stand out. And he got the opportunity to be a standout spy. And I think that was that desire plus the desire for money are the two things that really drove him.
Well, but what does that say about our counterintelligence? If he's seeing a Navy psychiatrist, and in terms of Snowden, apparently the CIA didn't notice, obviously, that he tried to break into the Directorate of Operations computers, and apparently there was a paper trail of criticism about his activities, or suspicions being raised about his activities, but somehow that didn't stop him from getting this important job at the NSA, or at least with a contractor for the NSA.
Matt, yeah, it does not speak well of our system. We really have to concede that it failed miserably.
So just turning back then to the today, and I believe Pollard's got about a year and a half left, does he not, on his sentence?
I believe that's correct.
So do you think that's a factor in why Kerry decided it would be okay to offer him up as a bargaining chip, if indeed that's what happened?
Well, I've never understood why Kerry does anything, but I suppose that might have had something to do with it. He is due to get out very soon. He could be paroled if he wanted to be. So it's his time is just about over.
So, but what about then charges on the part of his defenders, like Alan Dershowitz and others, who say that he has been given unprecedentedly harsh treatment?
Well, I think that's totally misleading. It is true that Americans who have done espionage activities on behalf of allies have received much lighter sentences than Pollard. But the enormity of the stuff that Pollard turned over is sort of what makes the argument apples and oranges. When Dershowitz and Jim Woolsey and others say that he's been unfairly treated because others like him were treated differently, frankly, for what he did, there are no others like him.
So just in closing then, Spike Berman, why did the Israelis want this kind of information, which was largely about the Soviet Union and their military and intelligence activities vis-a-vis the competition between the U.S. and the Soviet Union? It doesn't sound like a lot of it had to do with Israel.
Well, there was a lot of it that had to do with the Middle East, a lot that had to do with the way that the United States collected things. I suppose they wanted to learn how we do things. But frankly, having been an intelligence officer myself before I went to law school, I can tell you intelligence officers just want to collect information.
And so as far as the Israelis were concerned, they had an open door, like a keyhole right into the American crown jewels.
That's exactly right. And if an American had been in the same position with somebody else, we would have been asking for everything, whether it was relevant to what we were doing or not.
Well, Spike Berman, I thank you very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Again, I've been speaking with Spike Berman, who's a former intelligence officer, an international lawyer, and a recognized specialist in national security law with extensive experience in espionage and terrorism investigations. He was most recently the Deputy National Counterintelligence Executive, and prior to that was a senior research fellow at the National Defense University. He's retired from senior executive service at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, where he served successively as a Deputy General Counsel. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.